Okay, so let's go ahead and start with Dr. Willie Soon, Harvard Smithsonian.
All right, good morning, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that short movie. I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is. I guess you are smart enough to figure out that it has something to do with the Milky Way. But I can assure you what you have just seen is basically the fastest movie you ever seen in your whole life, perhaps. Because what you have just seen is essentially 5 billion years ago, and then fast forward 10 billion years, so 15 billion years in 1 minute. And there is a reason for doing that, but my main purpose today is essentially to use Milky Way and the sun to help me explain why I'm so utterly and thoroughly concerned about these issues of CO2 monster that is truly dangerous and scary in a lot of ways, and it clearly is scaring a lot of children. I'm going to start by sort of going over some of the issues that I have in terms of making this one basic point that I think everybody sort of can agree on, which is essentially to say that the magical CO2 control knob that these folks are telling you just simply doesn't exist. And we will go through the example from ClimateGate and IPCC. It has been puzzled me for quite a long time indeed when you read IPCC report. It's essentially posed like this question: can someone please explain to me, right? How does the IPCC put this sort of numeric probability to the statement that they say, you know, we are very likely that this global warming is caused by man-made CO2 emission, right? And they give a very likely to be 90%. I really haven't been able to come up with a very good answer until I read this blog from my good friend Matt Briggs, and one of the person that posted that and said, well, let's see. We have 10 experts sitting in a room, and six of them say, you know, it's 50-50 kind of percent chance. And then we got four of those who actually say that they're 150% sure. So you have 6 multiplied by 0.5, so you got 0.3, plus 4 times 1.5, so you got 0.6, so they added up to be 0.9, so it's about 90%. That's basically sum up precisely how much science we can learn from IPCC kind of report. And I do want to warn all of you, of course, because I definitely have deleted quite a lot of my emails. I do have to say, though, I'm here to speak only on my own behalf and doesn't represent anyone else in the universe. I remind you that the IPCC, in my opinion, is a bit like Mann and Jones and Pachauri Bargain Bazaar, which is a really strange place. And I don't really want to go there too often. Let's start with... Now, it's actually something very local. I mean, we have heard all these wonderful talks about sea level change, but I think you haven't heard this one. This one is basically a very fine condensed matter physicist from University of Chicago, Leo Kardanov, which is really a very, very serious physicist. But somewhat the kind of statement that he made is, you know, just make things so bad. I mean, it proved a very big point about how the whole issue has been politicized. What Professor Karanov is asking us to imagine is basically, in a period of 2 years, Lake Michigan could rose by 100 meters and it would come out to the 30th floor of the Sears Towers. I hope you all have a chance to go to see the Sears Towers. And he said, of course, this thing cannot happen here and now, but other thing can. I wonder what he mean by other thing can. So he tried to make the point that maybe all these people that's worried about global warming do have a point. And my question is precisely, what is the point? And I would say that, well, never mind the Sears Tower. The global CO2 politics is here and now, right now. We got to solve some problem. And the problem that we really need to solve is actually, let's save Washington, D.C. from the Chicago Mafia. I think most of us are agreeing here, and I'm not a politician, but as a scientist, I see I have a huge disgust for this sort of politicization of science that's really truly unhealthy. It serves no purpose to anyone, except for those guys, of course. Then we see something very, very profound from the famous Professor Stephen Schneider from Stanford, who said that, you know, when you think about all this, it's not really about here and now either. He says, you know, well, when we were thinking about these issues about greenhouse effect, it was really, really about that rapid future climate change that he says that has been predicted based on millions of satellite laboratory observation that would validate their ideas about, you know, this property of a greenhouse gas could, you know, trap the heat that is coming from incoming sunlight, and a theory that is beyond any reasonable doubt. Okay, that's highly impressive, but we got to do some checking, as we can tell from this situation. We are scientists, so we better take a closer look. Yes, exactly. You know, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong, but, you know, let's have a look. What happened? So the idea now is, if this CO2 is this very, very important gas that has this property to be able to sort of modulate the infrared radiation in the atmosphere, so let's take a look at it, because after all, you know, we do know very well about what CO2 molecule is. Okay, it's a very interesting molecule that could stretch, you know, have its bending mode in terms of that, its stretching mode, and then it has the bending mode that, you know, would be able to interact with radiation of infrared radiation. And one of the well-known features from carbon dioxide is indeed its ability to trap this particular features that's right in the middle there. It's at about 6. Actually, the number is right at 666, by the way. So it's been known to be a satanic fingerprint. I mean, our friend Pat Michaels did wrote a book with that title years ago, right, with Robert Bolling, called The Satanic Gas. I wonder if he realized about that at that time. But in terms of the wave number, it is a satanic gas. But you know what? So the whole idea then is, you couldn't go any more basic than that. If this CO2 is such this powerful gas that can trap this heat radiation, and we ought to be able to find this and confirm them in actual measurement of some kind to see whether how much it could agree or disagree. So this is actually one of the results that is available indeed. We do have two satellites results from 1997 that was flew in 1997. This is a Japanese satellite. And then another one that flew much earlier on Nimbus 4, 1970, where it's plotted as the solid curve there at the upper part, say, is the observed changes. And of course, if you look very carefully where we want to look at the 666 feature, and then you look at what the model is actually simulated, I guess it's really not very convincing to say that we have actually have this detected this, quote-unquote, the powerful CO2 greenhouse effect in the climate system. We just simply don't see it. It just disagree with the observation. Popular myth that is very well spread among their community, the CO2 believer, who have said that there is certain papers that was published in 2001 in Nature by Professor John Harris of Imperial College London, who has actually confirmed the actual greenhouse effect, right, that is seen in the CO2. But that was for a very small little region in Western Pacific, Wampu region. And then when you extend the result to, oh, excuse me, got a phone call. It must be Al Gore here. Excuse me. Sorry. I didn't turn off my phone. Sorry. So my bottom line then, if you want to say that this CO2, there's this control knob in the climate system, then I'm sorry. I just couldn't support that sort of thing. And of course, there's a whole lot more argument that goes around this. Now I want to come to the point about CO2 monster. And I want to make a very strong conclusion that CO2 is definitely not an air pollutant. CO2, as we know, is food for plants and marine life. And some of our friend Craig Itso, for example, will be talking about that. And then Leighton Stewart will be talking about effects of CO2 on plants. And, you know, plants really love CO2. So, you know, you will see which you prefer. I'm just going to focus very quickly on these issues of the, you know, it's called the second coming of the CO2 problems, which is called the evil twin problem of carbon dioxide, right? But here we have even a more clever phrase that is coming from our NOAA administrator by the name of Jane Lubchenco, which is really a very strange position for her to be holding office. And she actually testified in December, making a claim that, you know, this ocean now will be acidified, meaning that, you know, the ocean, all of a sudden, because we add more CO2, we're going to make all this marine life suffer, because simply you make the ocean more acidic, so essentially this acidic ocean is going to kind of erode all this calcium carbonate, which is the chalk material that is formed in all this marine life system, right? The shells of those life. And then she started to come up with a phrase like this, osteoporosis of the sea, which is truly very clever but scary. And then I want to just go a little bit details about what she said. She actually made this statement that is kind of somewhat unfortunate for her, because made of calcium carbonate or chalk that will be affected by this ocean acidification process. The hard part of many of these familiar animals like oyster, clams, corals, lobsters, crabs are made of calcium carbonate. So she's trying to explain that if we don't control carbon dioxide emission, we will probably won't have lobster and crab anymore. So that's really scary for the seafood industry. So we got to do something about that. It's a bit unfortunate for her is that because a day before this particular testimony, there is actually a paper came out in a journal called Geology. And that data, that research, of course, we knew that it was already in the process of coming out for about 6 months. And it essentially showed this sort of experimentation that has been done on basically, you know, growing lobsters under 400 parts per million and then have a lobster at 7 times higher. So a picture tell 1,000 word, please. I don't want to say more. And then crab, you know, 400, 7 times more. I guess the shell didn't disappear, but the crab seems to grow bigger. So now I'm just going to quickly wrap up the story by telling you a little bit story about the sun and the Milky Way. And this is the part in which that I need to explain what you saw earlier in the movie. Let me start with this image. I mean, maybe for some of you history buff who basically love to know a lot about the sun, this is actually among the first photograph of the sun that was taken in about 1873 or so, I believe. And then, of course, the outside is painted by another very famous, actually, person. That's not the big point. But now, to talk about solar years. This is what I call the fair comparison of what the role of sun is versus what the role of CO2 in the climate system. I won't even explain what that is, but it's essentially trying to tell you that if you study you want to study the effect of the sun versus the effect of the CO2 in the climate system, you better consider a picture like. Let me start now by assuming that the climate system is represented by this football player from the Chicago Bears team, Refrigerator Perry, from the 1980s or so. And then guess who the sun will be? And sun, I hope everybody know that sun is actually not only the gorilla in the system, it's actually the King Kong in the system. So King Kong is really big. And guess who CO2 is going to be then? Here, I'm going to select Willie Soon. All right? But the question, every single time you raise the question that the sun could affect the climate system, well, they say, you know, it could do it maybe in the past, maybe during the medieval warm time, but it couldn't do it now in the last 50 years. And the reason they're given is this. They say that because the sun, the King Kong, or the actually gorilla, is on diet. He's taking a little water, so he gained a little weight. Okay, that's essentially trying to explain the other bar before. But then, really soon, he's hungry. He's eating a lot of hamburger here, maybe about 5 of them right there. So he's been gaining a lot of weight. But according to them, because I have eaten a lot of hamburger, that I'm supposed to be able to take Refrigerator Perry and push him up and down. right? So that the future climate, or even the climate for the past 50 years, will go up and down according to what Willie Soon is doing, because you have eaten a lot of hamburger, right? 20 years, 50 years, and 100 years, even 1,000 years into the future. But you know, physically, you just couldn't have Willie Soon to push her refrigerator Perry in that sense, right? So that gave a little problem to all of this. For those, I guess, who still want to insist, right, the sun could not be pushing the climate system, here's a gorilla looking at you. I'm going to wrap it up, but I need to explain exactly how they frame the question in such that CO2 appears to be very, very important. The way they frame the question is that they say, when you look at this picture of CO2 versus the sun, you need to consider this so-called net radiative forcing. This is number straight out of IPCC. It says that the CO2 could contribute 1.7 watt per meter square over the last 150 years or so. And the sun, because it's on diet, drinking water, it can only gain 0.2 watt per meter square. So under that picture, guess what? I mean, they really win this one, if this were to be true. But I want to point to the consequence of the assumption that is involved in taking accepting this particular picture. In this picture, what you are assuming is that the climate system essentially do not have weather, do not even have season. In fact, it does not even have climate. The mean climatology, it has only climate change, according to them. So you please think twice about what do you think is a whole lot more plausible picture about what you know you should think about in terms of how climate system could change, okay? In that sense, under whatever influence. This one is just an example to try to show you the temperature record from Washington, D.C., and then basically an estimate of the sun's irradiance coming up or down. It's just my formal proposal to Greenpeace, which I've been trying to submit for almost 20 years. It's, you know, as you can see, I need a lot of funding from Greenpeace. Now the part to try to explain what you just saw in an earlier movie is essentially this sort of statement coming from here, Mr. Gore himself, who is so sure about the CO2 effects that, you know, hey, it's a principle in physics that is not a question of debate. It's a bit like gravity. It exists. But coming from Gore is already bad enough, but of course, it all comes from the scientist's perspective. Here, again, very well represented by Professor Stephen Schneider, who really want us to test this theory of gravity, to put our head in a guillotine and then to test that theory for the 13 zillion time. I would just simply make a short comment right here. Just the fact that the gravity exists and greenhouse effect exists doesn't mean that we understand it. Doesn't mean that we know how to sort of take this particular physical principle and predict it in the future, okay, so that we can make all that sorts of unjustifiable claim. And this is just basically a cartoon picture now trying to explain to you what you just saw. You essentially saw a gravity simulation of the interaction between Milky Way galaxies and our nearest one, Andromeda, sort of colliding with each other, starting from about -5 billion years ago forward to 10 billion years where both of these galaxies actually coalesce and merge into one, okay? And it shows actually the main reason I show you this is to actually make very simple point about both the simplicity and the complexity of gravity, which is extremely one of the hard problems to consider. In fact, it is a very simple simulation if you think about it. You just need to be represented by a picture like this, two chocolate bars, and then kind of correct if you give it a Kepler law. But the problem in all of this problem that make this thing collapse is indeed all the stuff that you don't see, things called the dark matter. It's about all this diffuse matter that is spread in a large volume that's roughly 5 million light years across that is essentially trying to give this simulation a life to discuss this. And then I just simply want to make a short and fun point to try to tell you, aren't you all curious that what happened when you have two of these collide and then what you're going to get? The short answer is, of course, it's called mucomida. And this is my only small little lesson that exists to contribute to you. If you haven't heard about this phrase, please remember this phrase because it'll be very interesting. In only about another 100 billion years into the future, where most of the expansion of the universe, most of the galaxy system, the extragalactic system, started to disappear from our what they call the event horizon, this is the only thing left. So astronomer in this particular universe is only going to see this mucomida. So that's the only thing we're going to be able to see in the next 100 billion years. That's really not that long, though, because proton is still not yet decayed at that time. So now, just finishing up and to try to explain you that why this CO2 monster is not such a big bad wolf after all. I sure hope that we all can agree that in terms of ClimateGate and IPCC, that what it proved to me as a scientist that this is a thorough corruption of climate science in the service of very, very confused mix of social political agenda related to that four E's, the energy, the economics, environment, and ecology. And then I hope you're convinced that the magical CO2 knot that they talk to you about, which is basically the false problem for the and then the false solution, just simply doesn't exist. I asked Mr. Gore and even Secretary Chu on this. What are we going to get by cutting CO2 emission? They just simply refuse to answer that question, which is very strange coming from people who so vehemently asking us to say that just the sun, just because the earth have a fever, they won't even allow us to take a temperature and they just want to chop our arms off, our legs off, and with all that bloody messy stuff, and they won't even allow us to take a temperature. And then when you take a temperature, I'm sorry, the globe is actually not warming for the past 10 to 15 years or so. I'm sorry, I guess. And then finally, please remember, regardless of what they say, regardless what the US Supreme Court has decided, CO2 could never ever be an air pollutant, looking at it from physically, biologically, chemically, and what have you. It's just not possible to be an air pollutant, and you can argue it left and right, and I have to say that science says that CO2 is food for plants and marine life. Thank you.